Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to give a talk here. And maybe if I wanted to be a little bit more provocative, I would say that the title of my talk would be Challenging Conventional Wisdom, so on phase transitions in the presence of Gwench disorder. So, I will tell what. So, okay. So, as an illustration of what I'm going to say, I will take the example of the random field Ising model, and I remind you the Hamiltonian. So, this is a ferromagnetic, for example, typically an acubic lattice, a ferromagnetic Ising model with a random external field, and which is quenched, and what we know is the probability distribution. So this, the fields are independent random variables which obey this distribution here. I don't know, is that on or not?
It's on.
Okay, very good. So, as we usually proceed and we explain that, we introduce n replicas, say, for the field, sigma alpha goes from 1 to n. And let's consider this quantity here. And I'll explain why we consider this quantity. So this is the average over distribution of the external field. So this is a two-particle, I mean, for example, spin-spin correlation function. And so the Hamiltonians are uncoupled. So there are two ways of writing this equation. The first is to remark, because the spins are uncoupled, here I can explicitly sum n minus 1 replicas. So this gives me the partition function to the power n minus 1. And I'm left with just one replica, which is the sigma 1. And so this, in the limit n goes to 0, this becomes 1 over z. And so this becomes the average of the correlation function over the disorder.
So, a general, almost
philosophical
question. Yes. Quench disorder is different from not quench. Where is it?
Yes.
By making replica, we sort of substitute quench by not quench, expecting to that the limit n goes to 0 will give me back correct
physics. No.
But physics for finite replica, zero
replica, very different. Yes. So, except the limit must be very similar. Yes.
How can we, therefore, in order to understand single limit,
we
must
solve
the single
finite
replica everywhere?
Yes. We'll, okay, we'll come into that. Keep your question for later. Okay, Paul. Okay, then. Okay. There are limitations, yes. There are limitations. And, okay. So that was one way of exploiting this equation. The other way is we can perform here the average over the disorder, and we take a kind of an effective Hamiltonian. The average over the disorder couples the replicas. And in this particular case, the replicate Hamiltonian is this one here. And so, so this correlation function with average over disorder is given by this expression here, which is like a type of correlation function in the replicated field theory, but without a denominator. So, accepting the replicas, so exactly what we have shown is this, that the average over disorder of the two-point correlation function can be computed by this expression here. Now the question, which is related to Pasha's question, is this physically relevant? Why do we compute the average of the disorder of the correlation function? No, correlation functions are relevant in general because we know that observables can be expressed in terms of a correlation function. Now, here, that's where the conventional wisdom comes, that this, as a mathematician says, and it can be proven in certain cases, there is concentration of the measure, which means that, or as physicists say, that there is self-averaging, and which means that a typical, if there is self-averaging, if you measure a typical correlation function, it would be, I mean, that the... So the conventional wisdom is that we can compute, so quantities observables in a replica field theory, and the usual story, you can do an analysis of the replicated Hamiltonian normalization group or everything, and the whole story goes on.
The correlation function is never self-averaging. Too.
We'll discuss that. That's the main point of the talk.
What is the definition
of self-averaging? It's the same as concentration of the measure. This means that, I mean, as you have many, many physical systems which are described by the same probability distribution of the disorder, and that if we take the infinite volume, the thermodynamic limit, and if we measure this quantity without the average, say, on all those different systems, we'll obtain the same value. So,
the average over the sample of different systems?
No. Or is the distribution is a delta function. That's what means concentration of the measure. Okay, over the Klotz disorder. That's why taking the average is physically meaningful. Okay? Now, this can be checked in the framework of replica theory. So there is a self-consistency condition. Say, in the same way as I did this previous calculation, I can repeat the calculation for the square, so of the for the average of the square of the correlation function. And if it is a delta function, the distribution, what I should find? I should find that this is the square of the average. Okay? Now, this quantity, with a calculation very similar to the previous one, can be expressed in the replicated field theory by this expression here, which means in the previous case, this was the correlation function of sigma sigma. In this case, if I'm taking the average of the second moment, it is the correlation function of a composite operator in a replica space. Okay, this is exactly the same calculation, so I'm not repeating it on the blackboard. So, in the high temperature phase, in the generic case, this computation can be carried out at all orders in perturbation theory. So, this high temperature means massive phase. Okay? And you can resum all the diagrams, and the result is the following, that the average of the two-point function behaves in this way. This is the dimension of the space. R is the distance of the two points. So M is the mass or the inverse of the correlation length.
You should tell us which modeling you are considering.
This is quite a generic. The example is the... Or in the high temperature phase, I mean, it could be the random field model, for example, or anything. I mean, high temperature phase. So you get this. And if you compute this, I mean, the correlation function, say, of the composite operator, so I should say d minus 1 over 2 is 1 for in 3 dimensions and 1 half in 2 dimensions. And if you compute this, you find exponential minus 2 mr. So in 3 dimensions, you find r square log square r. And in 2 dimensions, we find r square here. So which means, first of all, first conclusion is that the mass or the correlation function is self-averaging, because here you get m and here you get 2m. So at least in the high temperature phase, I mean, the mass is self-averaging, and there are violations of self-averaging which comes in the power prefactor. For example, here in three dimensions there is log square, so logarithmic violation, and here in two dimensions a power. Okay? So what I will argue, so the point of my talk, in this respect it is challenging, I will argue that this result, which is, I repeat, although it is obtained in all orders of perturbation theory, is not always valid, it may be wrong. And I should emphasize that this is a high temperature result. So it has nothing to do with infrared singularities or replica symmetry breaking or anything. Okay, that's why, I mean, it's...
The terms of high temperature series are regular in replica parameter. You can limit on regular manner.
Yes. Yes, and you can resum, and yes.
So,
we have performed large-scale numerical computations, say for the random field using model in three dimensions, with Parisi, and what we have computed numerically is just this, so the two-point correlation function, or so the average of the higher model, and look at the long-distance behavior of the correlation functions. Let's call M1 the mass, say, for the average correlation function, and M2 the average of the square. So, as we said before, if there was a self-averaging, M2 should be twice M of 1. So what I am going to show now in the picture is the ratio M2 over M1, which is a dimensionless quantity, was a function, the scaling function, in order to be able to extrapolate to the infinite volume limit. So you know, if we have something which is without a dimension, it should be a function. Okay, maybe T minus TC. In this case, is G is the ferromagnetic coupling, but that's a detail. Don't bother about that. But this is also a function of ML. So we don't know this function, but we measure M, which is M1. We know L, so we can plot this as a function of okay. And here is the result. So this is the ratio M2 over M1. This is ML. And you see we have plotted different sizes, 160 to the cube, 120 to the cube, and 80 to the cube. So self-averaging means that the ratio is 2. And we see that here the ratio is 2, which means this is very high temperature, which means large mass. But as the mass gets smaller, we see it tends to 1. So this is a very surprising result, that the mass ratio, so in this case, I mean, so there is very strong violation of self-averaging of the correlation length. So the correlation length, the ratio goes to 1. And that's the result we're going to discuss in the rest of the talk. So that's the main result, which is a numerical. So maybe make a further comment here, that you can see how, I mean, okay, I made it in the next transparency. So I should say there are similar results for the, okay, but that I show later.
Can I just ask about that transparency?
Yes.
So, I mean, as I, at a given temperature, if I make the system size larger, I go to the right.
Yes, because L at a given M, if you take L larger, you go to the right. So this means for any finite system, I'm going close enough to the critical temperature, I get this result.
But on the other hand, for any non-critical system, if I make it large enough, I get back to the...
Yes. Yes. But as we go next to the... Yes. If you go next...
The left side of the diagram is using criticality.
Yes, the left side of the diagram is criticality, but you see there is a transition, and this is very far from criticality over here.
But the deviation only occurs when the correlation length is comparable to the size of the system.
Yeah. But it's easy, the deviation is near criticality, that's correct.
Why not exactly?
The derivation was done on the right of the...
Yes, the derivation, yes, the computation is done in the high temperature phase. So another way, yes, in fact, of showing this is the following, which maybe is more, is also more transparent, is empirically we found that the data can be very well represented by this formula. So that the average of the square is equal to the square of the average with some coefficient C2 and the correlation to the power 1 with some other coefficient C1. Okay? And now what I'm going to do, I'm going to show you C1. So C1, this is ML, and again is the same as before, so this is C1, and you see here C1 goes to zero, very in the high temperature phase, and in fact you can numerically compute how it goes to 1, it goes to 1 like 1 over L squared. It goes to zero, excuse me, like 1 over L squared, and you can show that this is the maximum possible rate it can go to zero. It cannot go faster than that. Okay? So, and here is 1 at criticality, which is the maximum possible violation of self-averaging. So you have a transition from the minimum possible violation for self-averaging to the maximum possible violation of self-averaging.
My question, what happens to C2? The normalization?
It's the normalization, so the yes.
You said this was pretty generic, but...
I will discuss that.
Okay.
That's one of the points come. Okay, that's what I said. Now, we try to think what is the meaning, what is the possible explanation of this type of result. So, as I said, in terms of field theory, as I said, in field theory, the one correlation function is given by this correlation, in the other case, is given by the composite operator correlation. So if the two at very large distances behave the same way, decay with, it means that there exists an intermediate state with some mass mu, which we can put here or here, and it couples to both to the operators phi alpha and to the composite operators phi alpha, phi beta. Okay, that's why, I mean, the long distance behavior test what is the lowest mass intermediate state. Now you can very easily see that no such state exists in perturbation theory. Because if you think a little bit, you have independence of replica, conservation, some of the replica numbers, and you see that does not exist in intermediate states in perturbation theory, which can at the same time couple to this operator and to this operator. So the only...
In your simulations, the fines were discrete spins. So
yes.
The natural interpretation would be to say, okay, the two fines are just doing the same, and since they're just 0 and 1, then you have quality.
I mean, the usual thing, when you write a field theory, you transform the discrete spins to continue variables.
But you're losing some information on your microscopic model.
But that's, I mean, the high temperature phase, I don't see, okay.
High temperature phase far away from the transition, that you're certainly allowed to do. But if you're in the low temperature phase, and you know you have 0 or 1 as an answer.
No, plus or minus 1, yes.
Plus or minus 1, when your two systems, are two copies are doing the same thing, and you would just replace fine alpha by beta.
No, in any case, I mean, you know that when you transform, you compute field theory, I mean, you take field theory operators, okay? You know, you have operator products. I mean, this is valid also for discrete variable, the easy mode. Or you could forget that and say the numerical simulation is done for discrete system. You are challenging something more fundamental of what I am challenging. Okay.
But I have an example in mind.
Okay, maybe let me go further away. We see that it would give other evidence, additional evidence. Okay? Yes.
You said that you will not see it in perturbative theory, but that's in the thermodynamic limit, right?
Yes.
So if
in volume limit.
You'll do finite size perturbatively. You'll probably see that, right?
Okay, let's say in field theory, what this is related to what people call threshold singularities. Okay, because this here is somehow, because this is a two particle, this is a threshold, and it is a question of estimating threshold singularities. Okay, so you can do that in the infinite volume limit. I'm not aware whether it is possible or not to estimate threshold singularities for finite systems.
But these arguments, these arguments through arguments which rely on field theory, through only for finite replica, and metaphysical not for zero replica, how can we think about some intermediate states if it is not a field theory or something?
But you can think that's the rule of the game. I'm challenging the rule of the game. Okay, the rule of the game is consider the replica, write normalization group equation, something for finite replicas, and take the zero. That's the thing I'm challenging. Okay. So.
Nicholas, let me understand what the statement is. So, what is the statement, the regime in which this equality between the one and the phi alpha to alpha and alpha beta correlation point is supposed to be true?
No, it's an experimental. The fact that we found that the coefficient C1 is equal to 1 implies this.
Yeah. But it was in a certain regime.
Or sigma, or C1 is finite, it doesn't need to be 1,
right.
It's finite.
And it was in the regime close to the critical point, right?
It has to, yes, it's close to criticality. Yeah.
Close to criticality.
Yes.
There we don't expect alpha anyway.
But, okay, this is a maximum violation of self-averaging. So, the only way out is to say that coupling of replicas is attractive. So there is a possibility of formation of a bound state. Formation of bound states is a non-perturbative phenomenon and explains, if there are non-perturbative phenomena setting up, explains the failure of perturbation theory, and so explains the failure in particular of dimensional reduction in the random field model. So you see, when go across to criticality, I mean, there are non-perturbative phenomena taking hold. So, I mean, this dimensional reduction, which is a result of perturbative normalization group or orders, is natural to fail. But there is another, let me finish that, there is another argument going to the same direction. What would happen if the interaction between replicas was repulsive? If we have a system where the interaction between replicas was repulsive, if we have repulsive forces, then we do not have formation of bound states, and in this case we expect the results of perturbative normalization group to be valid. So is there such a case? And the reply, the answer is yes. There is a physical example where the interaction among the replicas is repulsive, and this is the case of diluted branch polymers. If you write that, that's equivalent to having an imaginary external field, and because of the eye which is in the experiment field, if you write down the field theory, it gives you an effective field theory where the interactions among replicas is repulsive. So if this argument is correct, we should have dimensional reduction in the case of branch polymers. So, because the field theory is exactly the same in the two cases. It's exactly the same arguments which give work. Only the only difference between the cases is the sign of the interaction among replicas. So it was known from numerical results that dimensional reduction is true for branch polymers, and recently, a couple of years ago, this is a theorem. It has proven rigorously, mathematically, that for branch polymers by Bridges and Imbri, who are constructive field theorists, it has dimensional reduction has been proven rigorously for so this is another argument in favor of this interpretation.
Nicolas,
yes.
What does this bound say? Does it mean that the two replicas are identical? So that phi alpha
no, we
is
don't,
beta, or what does the bound say?
We don't know. And that's one of the main points. That's one of the, okay, we'll come back to that. So this means if there are bound states, there are new states with massive states there, there is a new mass, the field theory we're using is the wrong one. Okay, what we should do is formulate the theory in terms of the operator which describe the bound state and get a effective field theory described in terms of those operators, of those fields, and but in this case we don't know which are those fields. But we have other examples in physics where this is the case. For example, take the Sine-Gordon, for example. We know the Sine-Gordon model, the right operators to formulate the theory are fermions and not the phi of the Sine-Gordon. Or take the example of the U1, the Costa-Lewis-Thales transition, for example. If you try to write, you know, down in terms of the magnetization, the field theory for the U1 model, you will fail because the relevant variable in this case are the vortices. So, okay, so the point I'm advocating that it here there is some other formulation of the problem, which I do not know, and there are other operators, and so we're using, so in doing that, we're using the wrong formulation of the problem.
Has anyone looked at finite size scaling for these diluted branch polymers? Parallel investigation to yours for this particular case?
So the for branch polymers, I don't know about finite volume, but what I know is that this result, which is a very beautiful result of Bridges and Imbri, is valid not our results or Peter Young results, because they were not the only ones who have shown all orders perturbation theory dimensional reduction. It was only on criticality. But the proof of Bridges and Imbri is valid also a way of criticality.
But on top of all that, there is the finite size effects, which might look very similar.
No, but if it is far away of criticality, dimensional reduction is valid, then you expect finite volume to be irrelevant because we are at the massive phase. So the corrections exponentially adapt out finite volume corrections.
But not when apples of order the correlation.
Huh?
Not when system size.
No, yes. But in this, the remarkable thing about this proof is that Bridges and Imbri is also valid, is valid everywhere. Far away from critical.
Also
no, it was on, no, only. No, it was only on the critical point, our original proof. Is that they have two problems. One, that there is dimensional reduction, that the long distance behavior is like if you had two dimensions less.
But how precisely, I mean, when you were discussing your numerics, you were just comparing the length for exponential decay, but mm-hmm. I mean, you could also ask about coefficients and so on.
The statement is they have correlation functions in two systems, and they show that, if I remember correctly. And they say that this correlation function is given in terms of the other correlation functions in two less dimensions.
At all separations.
So it's very remarkable opinion result. Now, here we're making the claim that at least in this case, I mean, perturbative normalization group fails. What about the other predictions of perturbative normalization group? We may ask the question. And in particular, a very important prediction is the universality, the phase transition that there is. So we may ask the question now, what about universality? So is universality valid or not?
So are we now talking only about the random field Ising model? Or
for the moment,
about more generally?
More generally, but okay, we'll come back to what is more general. For the moment, I'm talking about the random field Ising model. Okay? So, what is the results for the random field Ising model? The results of universality. Again, what kind of universality means? First of all, that the exponents do not depend on the probability distribution. The universality class does not depend on the probability distribution of the external field. That's one of the claims. And the other claim, which is very important, is if you take a diluted antiferromagnet in an external field, this is in the same universality class as the random field model. And this statement is very important because this is the only experimental realization of the random field Ising model, is the diluted antiferromagnet in external field. So, and in that case also, the universality class does not depend neither on the value of the external field nor on the dilution. That's what perturbative normalization group tells you. Of course, this is a question which should be answered by experiment. Okay, these experiments can be done in principle to check that. Unfortunately, experiments have been done, but the situation is confusing. Different experimental groups and all the experiments were finding very different results, and people were insulting each other, saying that nobody considered the possibility that there is a violation. But furthermore, there is only one group left, experimental group left, which is the Belanger group here in California. And okay, they are making conflicting statements with themselves. Okay, they claim that the results are very different for strong dilution than from weak dilution. But the situation is, they admit that the situation is not very clear. So hopefully, so that's something which could be, the question could be answered by experiment. Of course, this would be the best way of answering the question. Now, I have done, also, yes?
Comment to that. I mean, strong dilution means that you see already percolation.
For the diluted side, exactly.
The diluted side.
So the thing is,
some totally different.
But you don't see that, but that intuitively you expect that would be different physics. But if you do the normalization group analysis, you don't see that. You don't see where the critical value of P of the dilution, you don't see any.
it's not in the field theory you're talking about. It's a different part of the phase diagram. It's very far away with the energy flow. So
no, but when you establish the correspondence between you are looking to the operator analysis and you neglect relevant, that's how you do establish that the diluted.
But that's weak disorder analysis.
Huh?
All this is weak disorder analysis.
Weak disorders means weak dilution. Weak dilution.
Weak dilution. With strong dilution.
But again,
percolation is something completely
different. Yes, but first of all, the percolation, the dilution is small. The critical value is 0.2 or something, or 0.18. Okay? And then you don't see anything. Okay.
But it's a different RG yes. fixed point, it's nothing to do.
But nobody has shown that this is a different explicitly, that there is. Okay, that's what is the hope, that there is a different fixed point. Okay, but to my knowledge, nobody has shown that this is really a different fixed point, a strong dilution.
Has done a very careful job in distinguishing the percolation physics in this experiment from the.
But still is. But even himself, I mean, he does not very strong statements today. And I tried to call him to find out the latest, but I could not. So, let me show here some numerical results of my own about the question of universality. So, P essentially is 1 over nu. This is a for different realizations, for different, say, so this is, so and Q is, I have computed, is the first no leading correction to infinite volume limit.
What is P again?
1 over nu, essentially. It's, if you do finite size scaling, you know that a finite size scaling is 1 over nu. Nu is the standard exponent, okay? The transition which dominates finite size scaling. But if you do finite size scaling, I had large enough sizes, I could also compute subdominant terms. Okay? And Q is the power of the subdominant term. The power is P plus Q is the subdominant term. And if you do that, this is 90% confidence, 92% confidence level. You see, if you do, you have two exponents, you don't find, you find an area, say, in the two-dimensional plane allowed for the two exponents. This is for the Gaussian distribution. This is the allowed area here for the Gaussian distribution of the random field. This is for the antiferromagnetic diluted antiferromagnet in a field. And this is for the bimodal distribution of the random field. And you see, at least if you believe those results, I think, okay, that those are, and this is, if you give some width to the bimodal distribution. Okay, this is the allowed region.
How big are the system size?
Huh?
How big are the system size?
It's up to 100 something. Okay, and because, and down to 8 to the cube or something. That's why you can determine, I mean, to the corrections also, to the leading behavior. Now, okay, what is those are the results. Now, do they prove that there is violation of universality? No. Why is it not proved? Because there is no reason that one should have only one non-leading correction. In principle, okay, you could have additional non-leading corrections, and okay, one could say that if you include many non-leading corrections, you could recover universality. But this becomes numerically intractable, the problem, if you have to. Already you see here that how the parameters are not well determined, the exponents, if you include. Okay. Now we come to the question which has been asked several times in this talk. How general is this phenomenon? For the moment, I show you that. How general is the phenomenon? I have shown the results for the random field model. So it is known in field theory that the formation of bound states. Okay?
What you have shown us up to now is
it's the random field model.
It's a non self-averaging, but the bound state, you said you don't know what it is, so how do you take this as a...
No, we see that there is the same mass determining bound states. It can be only bound state. It cannot be any. We'll come back again more.
This is your interpretation, but up to now you said you can't say what it is. So
But we don't know what is the
bound state.
Yes.
I don't know what it is.
It's
the bound state is a field theory formulation of the quench, yes, which is not field theory. Then it will save some.
No, this is the result. The numerical results would be compatible with the field theory. That's the only way to make the numerical results compatible with the field theory. So what is known that in the formation of bound state there is a competition between attraction, the attraction forces, and the available phase space. If the available phase space is very large, you need very strong attraction to form bound states. So, in constructive field theory, people have proven that in two dimensions, where the phase space is small, the formation of bound state is generic, with probability 1.
That's for finite number of replicas.
Yes, or for any theory. I mean, these people did not consider replica field theory. This is a general result in field theory. I mean,
Nicola, if you say it's proved, then you must be able to say what the bound state is.
No.
If you're saying you've proven the existence of a bound state, you can't tell me that.
I don't know. I give you the reference. It's Ekman, the person. Ekman.
What statement did he?
In two dimensions, you have almost always, if you have in ordinary field theory, if you have attractive forces, you have formation of bound states in two dimensions because phase space is small. But in three dimensions, you can have and you cannot have. It depends on the strength, in the particular case, of the strength of the interaction. So this is an indication, how general, So what we expect, so in particular, that this would be generic for two-dimensional systems. Okay? But in three, I show you the random field was a three-dimensional system. Okay, I show you a case of a three-dimensional system. Okay, and in order to prove, to investigate that, we studied numerically the random POTS ferromagnet. So you have the Q3 POTS model, so in two dimension, and the ferromagnetic coupling can take two values, okay, at random. And this model presents certain advantages of studying numerically. First, it is known to be self-dual, so we know exactly what is the transition temperature, which is a great help to analyze the data if you know the exact value of the transition temperature. And the other thing, that there are cluster algorithms, so you don't have slowing down, critical slowing down, so it is easy to analyze it numerically. So, now those are the results for the random POTS ferromagnetic model. This is the same as before. So this model has been studied a lot because people have made how you go out of it, criticality, Fermi connections with conformal field theory or something. So this has been studied numerically a lot. I say BC, the critical value of beta is known because of self-duality, and also the value of nu is considered known, is considered to be 1. That's why here is beta BC to the power 1, because, okay? And now this is the mass ratio, as before, and again, here self-averaging is 2. So you see that at high temperature, and then you see that when you go down to the Taurus criticality, there is violation of self-averaging for the mass. And so, but this is less strong than in the case of the random Phillies model, this was going to 1. So what do you expect? You have new power, new mass scales enter in the thing. You should have double exponentials, okay? 1 superposition of double exponentials. That's why this gives. So in the other case, what was very astonishing that you got in the random field case a single exponential also. And this is C1, as in the previous case. The same, you see the sizes here, and you see that here it goes to 0.12, does not go to 1. So the violation is not as strong as it was for the random field, but there is a violation. Then the other case which we studied was the Ising model, random ferromagnetic Ising model, Q equal 2 Potts model. In 2D. In that case, we could not get good precision, so we cannot make any claim about the ferromagnetic Ising model.
Expects logarithmic corrections.
Huh?
One expects logarithmic corrections.
Yes. So, some additional remarks. Kardar and collaborators have already noticed the formation of bound states in several 2D systems. So, for example, directed polymers in random media, interfaces, etc. Again, this was very beautiful work, which was an analysis in the late 80s. And the way, because they have replica field theories, which turns out to be one-dimensional replica field theories, which they could solve with better answers. In the case, so it's a completely different method. You solve through better answers, and you find the formation in this case of bound state. So this is another confirmation. So people, because was against this result, against the conventional wisdom, they decided to ignore those results. But I think I would make propaganda that this is a more general case. And the people say, as Pasha would say, who believes better answers in replicated field theory?
Fundamental problem is.
Okay, and then for the case for the random field is in model in 3 dimensions, there has been a computation by Brezin and Cyrano de Dominicis. So they consider the Bethe-Salpeter equation, to look to the kernel of the Bethe-Salpeter equation, and they show the appearance of an instability, which is another sign that something, I mean, perturbation, that formation. So you see there are a lot of evidence, I mean, coming from different places and all pointing to the same direction. And this is my conclusion. We need a better understanding of phase transitions in the presence of quest disorder. That depending on the cases, conventional wisdom may be wrong. Okay, this is my conclusion. And okay, if you have, yes, John.
Okay, I don't understand why this should only affect finite size effects near the critical point. Why? I mean, if a bound state in some kind of description forms, I'd have thought it should form at some finite distance from the critical point, and then you wouldn't just have to focus on finite size effects
but it could form also, yes, near the critical point. You never know where it forms.
Yeah,
you can never predict. You never
system size.
Hmm?
And why should the system size enter the problem of forming a bound state?
Because the value over form of back state is a running coupling constant, okay? And
what
be a better description to call them surface states than the connection to the finite size effects will be clearer.
Because we have all those other results here. And I don't know whether, first of all, I don't know what first surface states are, but I know.
The effect goes away, the thermodynamic limits.
Not if you are very close to the critical point.
That goes to infinity, it all goes away.
If no, but if only you're away from a critical point. If you're at a critical point, then the ratio of masses goes to some value which is not.
Not.
It's consistent with everything we know because we can calculate, even analytically, the correlation functions at the critical point, and they are not self-averaging, and they form a multi-fractal. It has been confirmed numerically extensive calculations in these POTS models, and everything seems to be working perfectly.
Numeric, so, but not in the conventional wisdom.
I mean, we can do calculations, and they fit with numerics perfectly, and so what is... What is the problem? I guess what you're saying, you have another view of this. When you come out of the massive phase and approach the critical point, there's some bound state description of this phenomenon coming from this angle. If I understand correctly, that's what you're pointing out. Is that a correct way of thinking?
Yes, but okay, when you're saying multifractal behavior, what I presume that you are saying, let me see whether I understand what you're saying, is when you write to those correlation functions, there are different operator correlation functions, and then if you try to compute the critical exponents, they are different.
Well, there's the number depending on which moment.
Exactly, because all of those composite operators, if you take higher moments, you get different composite operators. Okay, different composite operators. If you write the diagrams, the normalization group diagrams, the anomalous dimensions are different. That's what you are meaning.
Right.
By yes. Okay, but this is a different argument. Okay, it's exactly what you are meaning. Okay.
It's a different argument.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
because this is exactly, you do a calculation exactly on the critical point.
At the critical point.
Exactly.
So if I understand correctly, let me rephrase this again. You're giving a view of this coming from the massive phase.
Yes.
Somehow, in terms of some bound state formation, which always happens in this moment.
Yes. And so it should happen in two. Yes.
Maybe you can make a comment on the observation by Carter for the directed polymers and random media interface problems. And that's what also happens in our formulation with the functional RG. And we say, okay, that's a point where you have multiple solutions, multiple minima, the meta stability arises. And then our formula shows up as a cusp in the dipolar correlation statement. We make them. You have to follow the whole distribution of this order, the distribution function on the R2. That would fit.
Yes.
That's what you call.
But could you, I don't know the thing, you are an expert on functional normalization group, I'm not. So can you study what the universality classes are in the context using functional normalization group?
Can you say
whether the random field model and the diluted antiferromagnetic field are or not on the same universality class?
So you can study universality for some problems. It's easy and natural because you have a good expansion point. That's, for instance, the directed polymers and random media. You have random bond universality class, you have the random bit universality class, you have the periodic universality class, and you have a generic long-range correlated universality class. For the random field problem, you can do it for if you have an n-component version of it, and you can do things, but this is very complicated. You can only do the expansion around the four dimension using expansion around the nonlinear sigma model. For the random field easing model, there's no no point around which you can do a controlled expansion. So then you can try to do approximations, and Dajus and TCF, for instance, done this using this exact RG, coupled with functional RG, but this is two layers of black box techniques.
But, okay, and so anything.
I don't know whether. Yeah. You can make sense.
That's exactly what makes me a little bit uneasy. So in conventional normalization group, you have the operator product expansion, which makes a lot of sense. Okay, and that's how you classify the universality class theories or something. I don't see, maybe it's because of my ignorance, but I don't see any similar tool like the operator product expansion for functional normalization group.
Functional fixed points. That gives specification.
But I don't see perturbation around stability things around.
Stability analysis, that's standard.
Yes. The question about these bound states. Bound states is a notion again which belongs entirely solely to field theory, which
yes.
means existence of scattering states.
Yes.
When you go to the selective polygons, what scattering states is, what actually can be formed in some example? If for finite replica I see the bound states, go to L or 0,
no. In fact, if you are looking to the to Gardner's calculation, which is interesting, for finite n, you don't have bound states. And the thing is, you look at the mass of the state, and so that the mass becomes lower. You have crossing of the energy levels only when n becomes smaller than 1.
This is
a challenge. Yes.
A good way to look at this is you can access whatever happens here in perturbation theory. In perturbation theory, the replica entered just polynomially. The number of replica enters any calculation during perturbation theory in a polynomial way, and it's trivial to analytically continue a polynomial to n equals 0. Right? So the only problem with thinking about replicas is when you have some non-perturbative issues or calculations. Well, not necessarily. So the calculations he was Niklas was mentioning about the Potts model are perturbative calculations in some parameter, like this deviation central charge from 2 or something, and they can be compared with numerics, and they compare extremely well. So everything works fine in this limits. It's just conceptually difficult. If you want to do that analytic continuation in a non-perturbative context, and there
are these two examples here, overhead are non-perturbating.
So it's not easy to understand. So we can look at Cardars, and you can just follow everything that happens. But it's not easy to understand.
Yeah.
So could I ask, are Cardars results analogous to yours in the sense that he sees are finite size effects?
No. If I remember, because those are old results, okay, in the late 80s, there were results where he saw a violation of self-averaging even in the strong in the high temperature phase. And if I remember correctly, because, I mean, you should take what I'm saying with caution, because this is very... I think one of the problems he looked was propagation of electrons in a random medium. Okay, in the extreme high temperature phase, where you sum on the square lattice on all paths, not loops. And in that case, he found results which were non-self-averaging. And even, I think even in that case. So in this respect, in this case, it was stronger because it was valid also away from criticality, not only at criticality.
Pasha's absolutely right about the danger of this continuation in Cardan's case.
No, in Cardan's case, they were for example, for the electrons in a random electromagnetic potential, it was pure numerical. It was not, and it was transfer matrix calculation. It was not, but these calculations was compatible. Which was completely numerical, using because it was using transfer matrix.
Well, the exponent was fine, the variable was there. For the actual higher human,
and I don't remember. We should look to the to because there are several papers. There is not just one.
It's a special problem in this case because you can only calculate moments that have some quantity. And what you really want, continuing to n equals 0, you want the probability distribution. You want to infer the probability distribution from the moments. And in this case, so there's a theorem that when the moments grow too fast with the order of the moment, there it's not guaranteed that you have a unique probability distribution. That's the case of Carter. So
yeah, it went like n cubed.
It goes like n cubed. Yeah. So,
so it gets so all the Hayek moments,
yes.
Correct.
Well,
as people work them out subsequently, according to that prediction.
There is another calculation by Brunet and Derrida where they look on the same system but on a finite cylinder that also goes to regularize it. And I think in that case, it converges against the measure converges against the delta function of the universal. They call it the universal function which characterizes the crossover to this delta distribution.
Coming back to the point of Andreas, in case of the random mode Fox model, three states. The distributor drives the system to disorder. Critical point. So how in that case you see the effect of the bound states?
What I'm looking at, I mean, computation of bound states is a very tricky in field theory. And the only way, people know to do that, at least, is the Bethe-Salpeter equation, which of course you have to do approximations. Okay, so I don't know, to do that. For example, in quantum mechanics, you write the Schrödinger equation if you look into bound states. So in field theory, you have to write the Bethe-Salpeter equation, and then you don't know. So I don't know how in field theory I could find follow the formation of bound states, except the only argument coming here from field theory is this one, this instability of the kernel of Bethe-Salpeter equation by Brezin and the Dominicis. Okay? But so what I present is are numerical results which are consistent with this picture.
Maybe from the three states they decoupled from the theory. Maybe for the spot free state, this bound state, the gap all from the theory?
I don't know.
Okay, if there are no more questions, then I think Nicola for his nice.
If you have a massive theory, go away from critical form. Then pick something with a lot of sub-brands and firm magnetism. So you have these balance states. And as soon as you have a mass scale, well, you have this expectation that apparently they try to form some balance. I'm not quite understanding well. And they're just, if I understand correctly, the onset of what you see, an onset of averaging of a correlation function at the critical form. Correlation length, of course, must self-average, or it does. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're just trying to discuss the meaning of the finite size aspect of your talk. So if I take a simple example, like a random firm magnet, and I go away from it, so it has a unique critical temperature. I think we agree on that, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, to the best that we know.
To the best of our knowledge. Okay. So then we go away from a critical temperature and it will be a mass gap, a correlation length. But there's only one correlation length in these systems, so it's not 10,000. Right? All the different moments of a correlation function apparently decay exponentially on the same length scale, which is just one correlation length. Right? However, as you approach the critical point, this sort of self-averaging must disappear, because we know at the critical point the critical correlation functions don't self-average anymore. Even their exponents are different, as you said in the talk as well, right? You know, if you calculate the second moment of a correlation function compared with the first moment of a correlation function squared, you don't get the same power.
Right? I mean,
and so yes. This is...
Because this is old, this is some work which is 2 or 3 years old. I have forgotten the... But... I have the impression, I don't know, you could look to average correlation functions.
Okay.
To space average.
Or ensemble average, probably we
wouldn't. Yes, or space averaging. So, because susceptibility sometimes are space average.
Okay.
Now, if you have different exponents, you don't see. For the you are at a critical point and you have different exponents.
Different exponents for which? Two
for the power, for the different moments.
For the different moments, yeah.
It depends what is the difference of the numerical difference of the exponents. It could be that this difference is washed out by averaging of the space.
No, we presumably believe that the spatial average is by some ergodicity assumptions by these models certainly equivalent to doing the disorder average. So the spatial average performs basically the average to get the first moment of the correlation.
But this would depend on what the difference of the exponent is. Okay, if you take at face value. If the difference is more than power volume or something, which is non... which is, nobody believes that this is the case, okay? But if you have very huge difference, I mean, either the exponents of the different moments are such that they, they diverge with powers of the volume, which nobody believes. Okay, it could be, yes. But in the other case, I don't know, if you are in the massive, if you have really very different masses, maybe the fact that, I don't know.
So let me understand,
yes.
So you're trying to say
I'm confused.
But I think I have a very pretty firm idea that if I take one of these weak random systems, like some random bond icing per magnet or pots per magnet in suitable dimension, if I just average the two-point correlation function in disorders, if I just integrate the two-point correlation function over the center mass of their coordinates, of the two points where the correlation point is taken, I would presume I cannot get anything else but the first moment. But you're saying you can somehow envision situation where the second moment would play a role in this average?
Try to write down if you do an average. I mean, you subtract the first moment square or something.
Mm. But why should that quantity?
And now it depends how. So this is defined. So what the difference is on the on the volume or something.
I see. But so this happens actually in the. So the statement is, I guess, what I can make precise is that if you average this two-point correlation function over their center mass, over the whole volume, then you still get a fluctuating quantity. It's not yet a number. It's still fluctuating. So this happens, which happens for wave functions in Anderson localization, right? We do know examples where this happens, right? Then things are more complicated. But this presumably never happens in these random magnets.
Because you never expect...
These fluctuations are never so strong.
These
disorder fluctuations are never so strong.
You know, at least,
Right. And one can... I mean, we can make this precise, I think.
Yes.
Right?
But
precise.
Yes. And, but one of the... I think of the arguments we should... I mean, tell experimentalists that also, I didn't say also for the easing, spin glass easing, of course. So the people everywhere finding very different exponents, okay? And experimentally, for example, in a case finding something exaggerating 1/2, in another case which would be the same finding -1/2.
For which problem?
For the spin glasses. For
the
different,
spin glasses.
For example. Yes. Because it's the general attitude to those experimental results of the theorist has been, we know that those systems are very difficult to equilibrate, so experiments are meaningless because people did not equilibrate, so they could not measure the... But... nobody is doing experiments anymore. Okay,
on
spin glasses, or in the random field model, there is only one group continue. Belanger continuing to do experiments, and I think we should tell to those people that they should check. There is an open possibility. I mean, they should check for maybe try to do this. Once I talk with Monod, who is an experimentalist. I mean, and. His group has done probably the certain of the best determination of Wittig exponents in spin glasses in the early, what was it, in the 80s, late 80s. He told me that those experiments took 3 years at that time, and he could repeat the same experiments with present-day technology in 2 hours.